to First Things First. It is Thursday. We are crawling our way through the week. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is the Hall of Famer Chris Carter. That is Nick Wright. What?
What defines crawling your way through the week?
It just feels like it's been a long week because next week is the holiday. We're a week.
I feel like the week is flying by. Yeah.
No, no, it wasn't a negative thing.
No, I'm running.
I love every day. I want every day to last long.
Fix it.
Woo! Okay.
I'm wiped out.
In Jenna's defense, it's rare for her to make it to Thursday without having a sick day off, so I understand why this
one
has
taken long. Oh, see, that was not in my defense.
It's felt longer for her than usual.
That is just not right. We got a big show today. The Warriors lost again last night. Three-time heavyweight champ Lennox Lewis will sit right there. He'll join us in studio in less than an hour, but we start with a little NFL football. 2 weeks left in the NFL's regular season, and for some, a chance to make a final playoff push. The Dallas Cowboys have already made the push, now looking to clinch a win over Tampa Bay, and they win the NFC East. Cowboys host the Bucs on Sunday. This Cowboys team, 6-1 at home this season, while just 2-5 on the road. Ezekiel Elliott spoke about the team's approach to Sunday's game.
Approaching this game like we've approached, you know, the past six, you know, back against the wall, this is a must-win for us. You know, we got to do whatever we can to go out there and secure that NFC East division title. And, we just got to, you know that nothing's going to be given to us. We got to go out there and take everything. So, you know, we just got to have that mindset going into this Sunday so we can come out of there winning.
All right, CC, we saw one Cowboys team last week and then one the 5 weeks prior. Which team do you expect to see Sunday against Tampa Bay?
I expect them to get back on track. I expect them to get off to a fast start. This is a Tampa Bay team that you can't take for granted. I think that the Saints will give the Cowboys a healthy example of the type of talent that Tampa Bay and the type of players that they have, the big plays that they can make. So the Cowboys, I believe that they'll approach this game the right way. We can't expect a young football team. We bragged about their defense. We bragged about their ages. We always talk about Dak and Zeke and how young they are now. Amari Cooper, another guy under 25. So, man, their core group of guys, very, very young group. We can't expect them to not have one hiccup in a six-week stretch. I mean, they were playing some tremendous football. This team has come a long way. This is not a team you would like to be able to face in the playoffs because of their ability to be able to run the ball the way they are. And I believe that their defense will show up when it's time for them to show up in the playoffs. So what they have to do, create some turnovers. This defense get after Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay one of the worst in the league as far as turnover differential. At the bottom right there, 31st in the league. So with 32 giveaways that they've had this year, Dallas should be looking for those opportunities to create extra possessions for Zeke and Dak and to make the field shorter. So in a game like this, jump right on top of them from the beginning. Guys begin to question. You mentioned the holidays. You think these athletes ain't thinking about the holidays? These are some of the most hectic weeks. So watch the lines as far as Vegas, and then you're going to watch on Sunday and wonder, man, certain teams are going to play like a half of football, and if the game is not competitive, they're going to start worrying about their knees, mm-hmm. worrying, I don't want to get a surgery this offseason. So I believe the Dallas Cowboys, that's what they should do to Tampa Bay, create some turnovers early, on a short field. I believe that leads them to a big win at home.
This game will determine to me whether or not last week was a hiccup or not. I think it was. I'm going into the week, I said this letdown game for Dallas, Indy needs it, all of that. So I agree with nearly everything Chris said. Unless Dallas has a bad performance this week, in which case you will start to say, hold on a second. Was the aberration more the winning streak rather than the letdown against Indy? Because if I'm going to take Dallas as seriously as Jerry Jones wants them taken as a playoff contender, then they dominate the Tampa Bay Bucks. Then this is a game at home to clinch the division that they run it down their throats and they make big plays in the passing game. This Tampa defense is turning the average opposing running back into Adrian Peterson, prime Adrian Peterson. They've already allowed 1,800 mm-hmm. rushing yards this year at nearly 5 yards per carry, and they're allowing the opposing quarterback into prime Drew Brees, allowing 72% completions and a 111 passer rating. So that's over the course of the season. So if Dallas is a legitimate playoff threat, which I think when they play their best they can be, this is a game that Tampa Bay is thinking about the offseason at halftime, because this is a game Dallas is up 14-3 at halftime. There are different ways to win, different ways to lose. We'd feel differently, a little bit differently about Dallas this week if they had lost 23-20 Indy. And so there's different ways to win, even in a division clinching scenario.
I wouldn't feel any different, because I know you can have a mental lapse. I realize how good these NFL teams, and I don't think that there's not a team out there right now. The Saints are sputtering offensively. They play Pittsburgh. We're not drawing pitchers as far as the Saints are concerned. Now, the Saints, do they have to blow out Pittsburgh? Or why should we have Dallas under some different scale? These NFL games typically are always very, very competitive. What I'm saying is, we can't judge them if this is a close game that they weren't ready. It's a matter of winning and losing. Now, you would like to be able to see some margin, but the way Tampa Bay has played, the best team in the NFC would show you can't take Tampa Bay lightly. They beat New Orleans the first game of the season, and they were in a dogfight a couple weeks ago. So I think that we have to be careful and make sure we judge Dallas just like we judge the other teams trending towards the playoffs.
And I am trying to judge them that way. And if Tampa puts up a bunch of points, I'm not going to necessarily hold that against the Cowboys, even because this is a team that has shown it can score. But if you can't move the ball consistently against this defense, then when you're talking about a playoff game against...
It would show problems as far as that offensive line going forward. Yes, it would show some other symptoms that will be played out in the playoffs.
That's the point I'm making. So maybe I shouldn't point out that they need to win by multiple scores, but they need to have an efficient, high-powered offense.
Yes,
because
this
is by far the worst defense they're going to play the rest of the way. And every defense that's going to make the playoffs in the NFC is a good defense outside of maybe the Rams. Like, I know we have questions about them. Bears are great. The Vikings have the ability to be great. Seattle's been very consistent. We've talked about the Saints all of a sudden the last month of football, how good their defense has been. So I need to see some punch out of the Cowboys' offense in this game.
But keep in mind, there still won't be a healthy offensive line that Dallas is going to take into the game on Sunday. There's still questionable parts to it. So, yes, you do have Tampa Bay's defense, which you get to face, but you're still going to struggle with how to find a way to both run the ball and pass the ball with a shaky offensive line.
I believe the passing attack should really thrive.
Yes.
Tampa Bay, regardless of who's on the line, Tampa Bay is not – no NFL team wants to get run on. That's the most humiliating way. It's more of a macho thing. They would much rather you throw the ball for 500 yards than for you to rush for 200. So Tampa Bay, we'll have 7. We'll have 8 in the box. Like, for me, when I game plan, I'm not going into the game saying we're going to run the ball to force them. I'm going out there knowing they're going to have 7-8 in the box, and I'm throwing the ball, and I'm throwing it deep on play action early in the game to be able to loosen that defense up. And then I'm going to start coming back where Nick talks about and start getting that 5 yards a carry. But I believe that offense, it starts with the passing game, with Amari Cooper. I'm challenging that defense, and I'm challenging them deep.
One guy to watch, you mentioned the Cowboys offensive line. On the other side of the offensive line, Jason Pierre-Paul. He obviously made his whole name and career in this division against the Dallas Cowboys. He's now with Tampa. He's got 13.5 sacks this year. He's been very good for them. He knows the tendencies of these Cowboys offensive linemen, and he's going to be lined up next to one of the best deep players in the league that we don't talk about, Gerald McCoy, the D tackle. This Tampa defense has not been good. Those two guys have been good. It's the 9 players surrounding them who haven't necessarily always held up their end of the bargain. If Tampa is going to make this a dogfight, yes, they're going to score points, but I also would imagine, we talk about Dak being sacked 51 times, second most in football. Talk about Dak, the strip sacks. Jason Pierre-Paul coming around the corner, if Dak's holding onto the ball too long, that could be a game-changing play.
Gerald McCoy, also one of the funnier guys in the NFL. Thank you, Hard Knocks. Let's take a break. Coming up, how can the Seahawks slow down Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs? Hear from Pete Carroll next on First Things First. Coming up on New Year's Eve, the Red Box Bowl kicks off between Oregon and Michigan State at 2:30 Eastern on Fox. Then flip over to FS1 as number 17 Utah battles number 22 Northwestern in the San Diego County Credit Union Holiday Bowl at 6:30 Eastern. Or catch it all on the Fox Sports app. All right, guys, we're going to get to Pat Mahomes and Russell Wilson in a second. But first, a couple of big plays from last night presented by Geico. Kawhi Leonard with a big dunk.
Big win. I understand that the opposition was upset with the refs a lot of last night, but this was a great win by the Raptors. A lot of whining at the refs by both sides during this basketball game. Excellent win by the Raptors.
Great finish by Kawhi. You know, go to the left hand. Very few of our superstars can finish like that with both hands at the rim.
Sixers, Knicks. Ben Simmons takes the pass and absolutely bodies poor Noah Vonleh, then throws it down.
Oh, man, he was sending a message. They had a little altercation before this. Ben Simmons, a little LeBron James action right here.
Get
that LeBron spin move. Not as quick as LeBron, but work on it. He's right in his range right there, Jenna. That little circle, that's it. That's his universe.
There we go.
Suns in Boston. Check this out. Kyrie, between the leg pass to Jason Tatum on the fast break.
Listen, this is vintage Kyrie. That's beautiful and a great finish by Tatum, who knew it was. He knew some pass was coming. Was not caught by surprise at all. Very surprising fourth quarter in this game yesterday.
Surprising that we haven't seen Jason Tatum on the highlights as much as we thought after a spectacular playoff run last year.
Same game. You see the handles there?
Good Lord.
Just unfair. Breaks down two defenders, hits the reverse layup. So good.
I mean, this is where it's plays like this that make you say Kyrie Irving, the greatest handles ever in flat Earth history, the greatest handles ever in round Earth history. Doesn't matter. With respect to the original Isaiah Thomas, it's got to be Kyrie, man.
No, the only reason why you can say that is because Isaiah Thomas says that. Isaiah Thomas taught me how to dribble, met him at a young age. Oh, my goodness. He had the best handle until this dude was born on flat Earth.
Time for today's Subway Choice moment. So the Chiefs face a tough road challenge as they travel to Seattle. Patrick Mahomes and Russell Wilson, the two have a lot in common. Both rank in the top five in passer rating. Both go off script, give defenses fits, and both were actually drafted to play baseball. It is a good thing that didn't work out. Here's what Seahawks coach Pete Carroll had to say about facing Kansas City.
They have shown everything now. You know, we've seen them. You know, after all these games, we know what kind of the whole scope of this offense is. The first month of the season, everybody was kind of on their heels. And so hopefully we can, you know, settle into it. It's not that it gets easy because they have such a diverse attack that, you know, you got to be ready for a lot of stuff. But, you know, our guys are, you know, they're up for it. They're ready for the challenge and all of that. And we got to do a great job on their really classy receivers. You know, Kelce and Hill are just unbelievably talented guys, having great years. So there's a lot of issues here. So I think our guys will be ready to do this.
All right, CC, we'll start with you. This isn't the defense of a couple years ago, but it's still been pretty good, at least a good scoring defense. How do they slow down Patrick Mahomes in this Kansas City Chiefs offense?
Well, one way is trying to keep them off the field. So the Seattle and Pete Carroll, he thinks they're up to the challenge. That means challenging for Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson that offense. If they don't win time possession by 3 or 4 minutes, they don't have no chance against this type of offense. If they don't turn them over, they don't win the turnover battle, not by one, but by two. So I'm looking for 34 minutes time possessions, and they got to win the turnover battle by two. So in doing that, and Seattle has been great in both those areas. Number one in the NFL throughout the season. They changed their philosophy of how they're going to do things. They are not going to drop Russell Wilson back 45 times a game and tell him, hey, I need you to make 8 or 10 plays on your own. No, they are a physical football team. Their defense matches up with the physicality of that offense. They don't turn the ball over, and Russell can make just enough plays. They're a different team playing at home, so that is always an advantage. But the fast surface and the quickness that I believe Kansas City will enjoy playing on that turf, because the last few weeks they haven't been able to do that. It's been cold in Kansas City. The field's not the same. So if you want a recipe to win in one of these games, how to negate one of these big-time offenses, you have them sitting on the sideline. And then when they get on the field, they're rushing because they know, man, we don't have time of possession, and that forces mistakes, which lead to turnovers. That's the way the Seattle is able to get it done at home. If they're great in those two areas, time of possession and win that turnover margin by two, the Seahawks can upset Kansas City.
I'm glad you're talking about winning the turnover margin not by one but by two, because I know that the odds makers in Vegas say the Chiefs are only a 2.5-point favorite in this game. Because of how these teams match up against each other, I think the Chiefs, I if things go evenly, I don't think Seattle has a realistic path to victory. What we know is, as great as Russell Wilson and the Seahawks have been since he's gotten there, they're 4-27 if the opponent scores more than 24 points. Not 34 points, 24 points. Mm-hmm. And the Chiefs are the first team in NFL history to score at least 26 every single week of the year through 14 weeks. Like, a great defensive performance against the Chiefs is what the Ravens did, 27. What the Chargers did, 28. And so if you're going to get in the air, and by the way, this year for the Seahawks, it's been a good year when their opponent breaks 24 points. They're 1-5. Like, they the way they beat you is low scoring, grinded out games. And this year in particular, time of possession, because they're running the ball for 150 yards, every single week. 10 of the last 11 games, they've gone for 150 plus. The one part where it still, I think, even despite all that, doesn't play in Seattle's favor is the Chiefs have been a bad time possession team all year. They're bottom six time possession. They're used to playing at 28 minutes.
All of the high scoring teams, if you look at the top five highest scoring teams in NFL history, none of them won the time of possession over the season. The reason why? Because all of them had that quick strike ability and time of possession. It's not that important, especially when you have the lead. When you have the lead compared to trying to come from behind, and that's what teams, New England, when they had the great season, that's what they did. The greatest show on turf, that's what they did. The 98 Vikings, that's what they did. So that's not one of the stats that they'll look at and will scare them.
Normally, I would say Seattle is one of the tougher places to play in the NFL. But a close second would might be Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Do they have any advantage knowing how tough it is for opponents to come in and play in Kansas City? Now they take that show and they bring it to Seattle?
Yeah, it's a great understanding. Playing in Minnesota and we played in the Dome, we always felt like when we went on the road, we still had some advantage because we were used to playing with a lot of noise. Now, typically, we weren't on the field, but as football players, it's great training. When you play in that great environment in Kansas City, when you go on the road to a place like Seattle, no, it's not a shock. For the offensive linemen, which typically it's going to affect more than that, it's not a shock to them, that crowd noise. So it's a small little thing, but it's something in football games. It's the difference in, oh, man, illegal procedure, 1st and 15. Right. If Kansas City can keep the number right, 2nd and medium, 3rd and medium, 3rd and short, it becomes very hard for this Seattle defense, which I believe to be a good defense, not a great one. I believe you can take advantage of their cornerbacks on the outside if you keep that number right.
That is the other key to Seattle, is the Chiefs have been a very penalty-prone team. They commit a lot of penalties, and a lot of them are procedural penalties. They are false starts or delay of game situations, and that's where that crowd, particularly Sunday Night Football, where national TV got folks in Seattle been drinking all day long. They are going to be loud, raucous, and they're coming off a terrible loss. Seattle could have essentially locked up a playoff spot last week,
and
they lose to the Niners in overtime, where they won the coin toss. They, after not playing well for 60 minutes, they got the ball first. All you got to do is go down and score. Couldn't do it. So this is a desperate Seattle team. Where the Chiefs are in more of an advantageous spot than any team in football this year outside of maybe the Chargers, however, is this. They are battle-tested, man. They've played two against the Chargers, one against Pittsburgh, game against Baltimore, game against New England, game against the Rams, now a game against Seattle. They have played the majority of teams that are going to make the playoffs. The Chiefs have played them already. So they haven't gotten to 11-3 by beating up on bad teams. They have gone through a first-place schedule in a tough division and a tough cross both of their other divisional matchups. The AFC North has a couple good teams. The NFC West has a couple good teams. So playing a team the quality of Seattle won't shock Kansas City. What could shock Kansas City is if Seattle says, we're just going to run it on first down. We're going to run it on second down. We're going to run it again on third down. Because where the Chiefs defense, the only thing the Chiefs defense does well is get to the quarterback and force turnovers. And the thing they do worse than anybody is stop the run. And I think Seattle, my game plan if I'm Seattle is Chris Carson, Russell out on an option. Like run.
Tell me what this game means for Seattle. Lay out the stakes for this
game. For Seattle, they win the game. They're going to the playoffs. They lose the game. It's all of a sudden in play. They don't.
In a year that they're rebuilding, it means a lot. Coaches like Pete Carroll, oh, no, I'm not rebuilding. I got Russell, man. We're retooling for them to be able to get in the playoffs because let's not forget, they're in a division with the Rams. So to be able to get in and get that wild card spot, I believe it means a lot for Pete Carroll and his program as they move forward. This is a team because they got some experience. They got some guys. Watch out for Frank Clark in this game. Yeah. All right. If you get after the game, if Seattle wins, well, what happened? They dominate time possession. They get the two turnovers, and Frank Clark has caused havoc in the backfield of Kansas City.
You asked what it meant for Seattle. For Kansas City, it either means they officially or unofficially lock up the one seed. They could, depending on what happens with the Chargers on Saturday, what happens with the Texans, they could officially lock up the one seed with a win on Sunday Night Football. But even if it's not official, they have the Raiders at home in Week 17. But if they lose, the one seed, now you're talking about the five seed.
Yeah.
Like
the Raiders are going to be dangerous. They signed Peterman.
Oh, Peterman. You're right.
Peterman. They did sign him yesterday.
Yeah, after his fifth trial. Nate Peterman, man. Good to be him.
Right?
One touchdown, seven picks career. How about this? Five trials. Everyone wants to get Peterman
not?
A job.
All right, let's take a break. Coming up, what can the Steelers do to escape New Orleans with a win? That's next. This is First Things First. Welcome back to First Things First. Look who's here. Three-time Super Bowl champ. All-around great guy, tons of insight, tons of takes. It is Mark Stinkschlereth. How are you, buddy?
I'm good, thank you.
Yeah?
Thank you, yes.
Okay, awesome. Yeah. Glad we got that out of the way. All right, Stink, let's talk some Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers pulled off a crucial win against the Patriots last week, and as a reward for that, they get to face the 12-2 New Orleans Saints. Important to note, guys, had they lost, they would still be facing the New Orleans Saints. Over the last 6 weeks, no defense has been better than New Orleans. Big Ben spoke on the Steelers' focus heading into Week 16.
Well, you just want to get in the playoffs. It doesn't matter how you get in. You just want to get in. Obviously, the first and second seed, you liked it, but I don't think we can get that now, so let's just find a way to get in.
And how do you attack a defense that seems so well-rounded? You know, they're strong in pretty much every area.
Just try and protect the ball. The guys up front are going to have their hands full with the pass rush and the noise like I talked about, and then, we're just going to have to win our matchups.
All right, Stink, besides protecting the ball, how does the Steelers' offense match up with what has been a very good Saints defense over the last couple of weeks?
No, I think the Steelers match up with any defense. I mean, you look at the weapons they have on the outside with Brown, with Smith-Schuster. Washington has played really well
of late.
Yeah, of late. So, I think that's the big thing. The thing to me that is always shocking about the Steelers is the Steelers have a really good offensive line. The Steelers, to me, on film, choose not to run the ball most of the time. They're 30th in the league in running the ball, and you saw kind of the formula. Now, when you run the ball, you don't put up a lot of points usually, right?
Yes.
You control the tempo of the game. You control the line of scrimmage. You do all those things. But, again, against New England, they ran the heck out of the ball. They only scored 17 points. So that's what you get into. You get into a little bit of a fight. Because you have one bad run and coordinators are like, well, we've got so many weapons on the outside. Mm-hmm. And the Steelers choose oftentimes just to abandon it. And I thought the thing they did better than anything else last week in winning against New England was they said, no, we are going to stay true to what we are. We're going to stay true to running this football and creating some big plays outside. But again, you know, CC will tell you, and any offensive coordinator you talk to in this league will tell you, hey, we got to run the ball. We got to control the tempo, but we got to throw it to score.
But don't you think part of that is because for so many weeks this season, they weren't sure what they had at running back. Once they knew for sure L. Bell wasn't coming back, they knew they had James Conner, maybe not so sure. Jalen Samuels, maybe not so sure. So they went to the pass because that's what they do know and they have the personnel.
If we wanted to make an excuse, we could make that for Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. But as Stink said, not only this year, but the last several years, even when they have L. Bell, it's a luxury that you can put him outside. But their overall philosophy as an organization is, no, we're not going to punch you in the mouth. We got a great quarterback, a Hall of Fame quarterback, and we can develop wide receivers. I mean, if you look at the guys they have drafted and developed, like, they are like, there was a time when the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I think, Stink, you can relate to this, with John Elway. John Elway, man, he dropped back, he's going to sling it, they're going to win on John Elway. Man, they got Terrell Davis, like, listen, forget that. Our philosophy is we're getting ready to start doing this. And that's what you're saying about Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. They don't wake up in the morning and say, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to lean on the running back because they've been so skilled and because of their quarterback. It's just developed. We can make an excuse and say James Conner, but even when they have L. Bell, when they get into big games, their philosophy is they're going to put the, and they might throw it to L. Bell out of the backfield 8 or 10 times and maybe hand it to him 10 or 12. Never that philosophy. We're just going to take over the game with the physicality.
And to your point, this past week, they actually overtook Minnesota. Minnesota, which was passing at 66% of the times, were one of the reasons they fired their defensive coordinator. They then offensive coordinator, pardon me, John DeFilippo. They then ran the ball 40 times, did Minnesota this past week. This past week, now Pittsburgh has overtaken Minnesota. They passed the ball on the highest percentage of snaps of any team in the league, nearly 67%. Now, I understand everything everyone at the table is saying, but if there was ever a game where an offensive coordinator is going to look at the other team's strengths and weaknesses and say, man, we better be able to sling it around the yard, it would be when you're playing the number one rush defense and the number 28 pass defense. When you are playing a game in New Orleans in perfect conditions where you are going to say, and James Conner's not likely to play, say, okay, all of what you're saying might be true, but I don't think they're going to be able to change philosophy this week against this defense.
This is one of the big problems in stat sheets.
Yes.
It doesn't show the
last month. Because you're not in the game. And you don't realize Drew Brees is over there. And if I go 3 and out and give them a short field, and I can't back my quarterback up 40 times because they'll get after Big Ben. And what does Big Ben do when he gets a lot of pressure?
Turns it over.
Okay. Now you're getting ready to get boat raced in New Orleans. So you got to be careful when you go into these games because that's the way, man, I've had some great coordinators. And they really sat me down on those Tuesdays when the guys weren't there and explained to me, Chris, this is the way you attack. And there were a lot of times we went against defenses a lot like New Orleans is right now. And he said, you know what we're going to do, Chris? We're going to go in there and run the ball right down their throat because they sitting in their meeting room swearing up and down, I'm getting ready to throw it 45 times to you guys. Now, we're going to run it. And then we're going to play action, and then ultimately I need you guys to take over the game. But our philosophy going in is because they think we're going to do that, we're going to – and that's the New England. That's how New England wins year in, year out by doing the direct opposite.
Right. A lot of times what you look at when you look at a stat sheet is you see that the number one run defense, you see the number 28th rush defense – or passing defense. And then you get tricked into not looking at the rest of how the games have played out. So much of the time during the beginning of the year, they were so far ahead
that
of teams.
That teams, of course.
The teams don't run the ball. They choose not to
like
run the ball.
They went through like a 10-week period.
Right. And so I'm not saying that they're not good at that, but here's the deal. And I heard you earlier on the program because I was sitting over there listening. You know, I was taking in notes. Mental notes.
Thank you. Sometimes write it down.
Yeah, I should write it down. But here's the deal, and Chris is 100% right. We can throw one over the top, 70-yard touchdown, everybody celebrates. And you know what the defensive players go? Ah, they got us on that one. It's not a big deal. When you constantly just cram it down somebody's throat, 2 yards, 6 yards, 8 yards, 4 yards, 12 yards, 14 yards, man, it's demoralizing to a defense. Demoralizing. And so I just believe if Pittsburgh is going to win in New Orleans with that crowd noise and all the things that they have to do, you damn well better be a balanced football team and take some of the pressure off that passing
game. And stink that passing game. When you're in New Orleans, you're just a fraction off that snap count. So now, if I back that quarterback up, that left tackle, that right tackle. Now Pittsburgh's got a good offensive line.
But the D-line's getting the jump.
Oh man! So you have to really bake that into what the stats say compared to how this game is really going to play out.
And New Orleans is one of the loudest places. One of the loudest places in the National Football League. And I will tell you, going to your team, Kansas City, going in there and playing when I was with the Denver Broncos in that environment, we would scrap pile a third of our offense. We would commit to running. These are the runs we're going to run. We're going to commit to it. We know we're not going to have a great yard per carry average, but we have to get attempts. Attempts are important. And then we took out all of our 7-step drops, all of our 5-step drops that had a hitch. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, where you're hitching once and then go. We're throwing all go. We're throwing, you know, Z shallow cross.
The pass rushers were going to get a jump on the offensive line every
100%,
time.
100% of the time.
That's why you're saying
the one advantage you have as an offense is snap count. When you go on a place like that, it takes away that advantage.
And so the other part of this football game that this is one of the more jarring numbers for any playoff team this year is the Steelers are -9. In the turnover differential.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Every other team that is -8 or more, you're talking about the worst teams in football. You look
at
the Cardinals.
None of them have a Hall of Fame quarterback.
Correct.
Who's touching the ball 65 times on average a game.
And it's not like the team has just been caught with all of a sudden a bad fumble year where all the fumbles, every time the ball goes on the ground, they're not recovering it. These are the vast majority, 75% of these are Big Ben turnovers, either interceptions or fumbles. And so that you talked about the Saints boat racing them. If you lose the turnover battle in New Orleans, you're sunk. Mm-hmm. There's no path to victory. So whether they are going to focus on the run, the pass, or an even distribution, what they have to do is take care of the ball. Not have someone coming around the corner, Cam Jordan strip sacking Big Ben, not Big Ben throwing those red zone picks he loves so much. Like, they to have a chance in this game, they have to take care of the ball. And if they don't win this game, we could be here Monday and they're in eighth place in the AFC. Like, that is, even with the win last week, that's still available to them.
So we've gone through all the things that the Steelers really need to do, the things they need to work on, the things they haven't done well. Mm-hmm. Does this Steelers team still invoke fear in other teams? I know they're having an off year, but when you look on the schedule and you have the Steelers, no matter how they're playing, does a team still look at that as, oh, this is like the Patriots lore, right. This is like the Packers lore, regardless of how they're playing?
Do they have Big Ben?
Yes.
Do they have Antonio Brown?
No. Yes.
Do they have Smith-Schuster?
Yes.
Yeah, you're damn right. They invoke fear.
And typically they're going to have 20,000 show up, too, no matter where they're playing.
No matter where they travel. They travel great. I mean, absolutely. This is a team that has so much talent. You can make an argument, at least offensively. They've got a couple of offensive Pro Bowlers on the offensive line. They got guys on the outside that are Pro Bowlers. They got running back that's a Pro Bowler. They got a quarterback. I mean, this is a team that when you look at them talent-wise, you can make an argument they're as talented as any team you have offensively in the whole National Football League. So, of course, they invoke fear.
All right.
You got to stop them.
Okay.
Yes.
Stink.
Good question.
Stick around. Thank you. Coming up next, though, we got three-time heavyweight champion Lennox Lewis.
Oh, man.
Oh, I got some.
Okay. Okay.
Talk about invoking fear. How are you, sir?
How are you?
Welcome back. Twin brothers defend their titles in a huge night of championship fights on Fox. Jermall Charlo taking on Matt Korobov, while Jermell Charlo defends his belt against Tony Harrison. Only a great mom could name their kids such close names. Premier boxing champion Saturday at 8 Eastern, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. And who better to join us than former heavyweight world champ and Fox Sports boxing analyst Lennox Lewis.
All right.
What's up, sir?
Yes,
good to
sir.
See you, champ.
Welcome to the
Lennox,
show.
Thank you so much for being with us. What should fans expect from a great Saturday night of fighting here in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center?
Yeah, a lot of drama. Boxing always brings the drama. You never know what to expect. You know, like, I went to the fight the other day with the big heavyweights, Deontay and Tyson Fury.
Mm-hmm.
I would never expect what happened.
Man.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. That's this is what fight fans want to see. They want to see excitement. They want to see something they never expected to see.
The storylines, all of it.
All that.
So. I was reading some stuff, and you were doing a review of that heavyweight fight, and you said if these guys, they fight again, both of them should have learned a great deal from that fight. Will you express to the fans what they should have learned? Because both of them, you had great examples of things during the fight that, man, long term, it helps them to be better boxers and to be able to face each other again.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, Deontay, he learned that, you know, you got to learn to box. You got to learn that jab is very effective. He learned that not everybody you can knock out, you know. Eventually, there's a guy that's going to be in there, is going to be the same speed as you, same skills as you, and you can't knock him out. So you're going to have to do something different. So what he's learned is you got to box. So he's you know, next fight, he's going to probably be boxing. And what Tyson Fury learned, he learned, like, no, don't bend down. Being a 6'9" guy, don't bend down.
Make yourself shorter.
Shorter and allow a guy to come down on you with all that leverage and knock you out. So each one of these fighters always learns something. So.
And that was, and I want to talk about this event here in a second, but that was, everyone in the arena, including most notably Deontay Wilder, thought the fight was over. Fight was over. And then Tyson Fury did, I mean, to cross sports, The Undertaker all of a sudden. He just sat up from the dead. And it was I thought a draw was great in that, because now we're guaranteed to see it again, even if you thought Fury won the fight. But let's talk about this. Jermall Charlo, I know the Charlo twins. I used to briefly go to the same gym where they train at in Houston.
An amazing
story of these two guys, twin brothers. Thankfully, as we were talking about, different weight classes, so they don't have to worry about fighting each other. But both now champions. Jermall Jamal's in an odd spot because a late switch. Now he's going to fight Korobov, who I know is not who he was training for. Tell us about that fight, and then in general, when you all of a sudden have a different guy that you're going to be fighting against for a belt, what that's like.
Well, anytime you change your opponent, you change your mindset. This guy is going to come at you with something different that you didn't prepare for. And it's always difficult fighting those type of guys because, you know, they come out with something that you've never expected or you haven't had time to work on. So it's going to be an interesting fight. We're going to have to see how well they adapt. One's more aggressive, one leans back and does more boxing. So it'll be an interesting fight. A lot of drama in that fight, too.
What about with the other brother, with Jermell and Tony Harrison? What should fans look for in that one?
Well, that would be a little bit tougher fight because Tony comes and he's aggressive and he comes at you. So we're going to have to see how he deals with that.
All right, so let's talk heavyweights for a second. The opener, you have Dominic Brazil against Carlos Negron. If they either of these guys win, do you think they get a title shot?
Maybe, or maybe have another couple fights to kind of warm them up for that. It depends on how they look.
Lennox, in the break, we were talking a little bit more about how you could take where we're fighting, where boxing is right now, and bring it back to where it was, you know, a little bit years ago, where more people can see it, more people were following what you talked about, the drama and the storylines. You had some ideas of where you think fans could see it or how they could take boxing back into the popular time that it was.
Yeah, you know, it should be easy for people to turn on the TV and watch boxing. You know, anybody that loves fighting sports, they should be able to turn on the TV and see boxing and learn about guys that they've never learned about before. What usually happens, a guy gets famous, nobody really knows about him, then all of a sudden he's on Fox, he's on all these different pay-per-view channels. Nobody knows him, so they don't only really want to buy into him. What they need to do is grow up with him. Grow up seeing him on the TV. Oh, I like
to see
this guy.
Yeah, that's the way it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of boxing. I've been to a lot of your fights and everything. And the thing about even yourself, there were great fighters then, but we knew about you coming up in the ranks. Yeah. And in your day, I mean, you're a great athlete. How do we attract some more of the great athletes? Muhammad Ali and some of the other guys, Sugar Ray, Thomas Hunter, great athletes boxing. How do we attract those great athletes back to the sport that you love?
I think it starts with the amateurs. Amateurs, you know, you need that amateur buildup. You need these guys to come into the amateur sports and, you know, learn how to box correctly, learn the biomechanics of the sport. And, you know, this is where they learn from before they turn pro. A lot of them, like, have 10 fights and then they turn pro. I've had an extensive amateur career, 2 Olympics and, you know, over 200 fights as an amateur. Now I'm ready to turn pro. When I turn pro, I'm already gone through 10 fights. You know, these guys are going through 30 fights as professionals. I went through 100 fights as an amateur. So right now I find that the boxers are learning as they get to the top.
And so one of the things you were talking about as far as it being accessible to the general public, that's one of the cool things about these events now being on Fox. Everybody, people that don't have this channel have regular Fox. They have what we call Big Fox. It's going to be on Saturday nights, which is what you're talking about. Guys being able to, without having to necessarily pay a cost for it, turn on a fight, watch it, drink a beer with their buddies, and start to learn who these guys are. I think the Charlo twins are stars. I think people will like the fact that they're brothers, unlike the Klitschko brothers, who are in the same weight class, would never fight each other, and that put a stall on the heavyweight division for a decade. These two guys, you could have two twin brothers who for the next few years are the dominant faces of their weight class as we kind of age out of the Mayweather-Pacquiao era. Yeah. For as I know, you're obviously so the heavyweight champ of the world, and for a long time that's the baddest man on the planet.
That's right.
It's really been since your era ended, the most prominent boxers have been these guys' sizes. For people that are now coming back to boxing after your era, tell us a little bit about difference stylistically from the way these guys fight to the way you would fight in your famous matches.
You're talking the heavyweights or just the
like the difference between a middleweight fighter who we're going to see this weekend versus the way you fought.
Well, me, I was, it could all end in one punch. I don't get really paid for overtime, so I'm trying to take you out as soon as possible. You know, I find the smaller weight classes, obviously they don't get paid for overtime either. But they're more boxing, they're more flashy, and there's more of a game plan. I had a game plan as well, and if my game plan failed, I forgot another one. There's, you know, A, B, and C game plan. Sometimes with these guys, they only have one game plan.
Right. Now, what would you do to be able to bring back some of the kind of luster that has been lost with boxing to the heavyweight? If you could make an adjustment, what would you do to boxing now, especially as far as the heavyweights? Because people will always be attracted to that division. And as you mentioned, man, the fastest man in the world and the baddest man in the world, heavyweight champ, and whoever wins the 100 meters, what would you do to be able to bring some of that back?
Make there only be one belt. One belt, you know, when you get all these belts hanging around, champion over here, champion over here, champion over here. And then, you know, everybody wants to see these guys fight, but yet they don't fight. Now it's getting to a point where, you know, people are getting sick of it. They want to see the good fighters box the good fighters. And, you know, that's what Fox is doing, so I'm happy.
Wait, Lennox, before we leave you, I do have to ask. CeCe says that, and as a professional athlete, there's no athlete in better shape than a boxer at the top of his game, the way he trains, the way he practices, how prepared he is. At your most competitive, just how many hours a day were you training? Just give me an idea. I have to know what he's talking about.
It was like 8 hours a day, you know.
8 hours?
Yeah.
How many miles you running? How many sit-ups you doing?
I never ran miles. I ran in time, so it would be like an hour and a half running, you know.
That's insane.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, you got to think, if you're playing a 12-round fight, anyone that hasn't ever sparred or boxed or anything, just try to just run in place for 3 minutes. Just run in place for 3 minutes, take a 1 minute. Nobody punching you. Right. You're not punching anybody. Just run in place for 3 minutes.
No, forget that. Try shadow boxing, throwing punches just for a minute.
And with power, too. Yeah. Add the power to it.
All right, I thought you were going to go somewhere else. Before we go, Jenna, when you do the toss, Jenna is actually British.
Oh.
And so she puts on an American accent. If you wouldn't mind, could you, when we leave, can you grade her the way Jenna Wolf actually talks to British Jenna Wolf?
Bring the sexy British lady out.
Yes, let a true
come
British
on,
look,
come on,
better trainer than I am. Lennox, thank you so much for joining us today. We'll be watching Saturday night on Fox. More First Thing First right after this.
All right.
Back here with Mark Schlereth, we are going viral. LSU was taken on Central Florida on New Year's Day in the Fiesta Bowl, and head coach Ed Orgeron isn't just taking his opponent seriously, he's taking his press conferences seriously, too. Take a look and listen.
John Embry, another great young man from Destrehan, Louisiana. Hold on a second.
Hey, guys! Hey! I'm having a press conference, okay? Thank you!
Great young man. On a scrimmage, we wanted to get bigger. I'll stop.
Hey! Stop the ball! Stop the drill! I'm having a press conference! Thank you!
We had to fix the line of scrimmage. Went all the way to Michigan.
Coach, man.
He's a football coach. He's no college professor. Okay, no, he's a football coach. Hold the balls.
And you know what I realized watching that? Ed Orgeron, a little bit of a body double for my man Stink.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Skinny little pins and gigantic. I'm built like a turkey.
Exactly right. What day's leg day? 0 day. What day's upper chest day? Every day.
Every single day, baby.
A lot of guys around here subscribe to that.
Yeah. So.
But at that.
Boom, Brian. All right, Stink, time to talk quarterbacks. Two former MVPs, both battling some tough injuries right now. The Panthers are shutting down Cam Newton with that bad shoulder injury. He's been playing through. Also, Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers has a groin injury that he has been fighting through, but he will play this week. Packers will be here in New York facing off against the Jets. Here's what Aaron Rodgers had to say about playing this Sunday.
It's a lot about leadership. You know, if I want to, be listened to and followed and looked up to, how could I stand here and say that, you know, these games that don't matter for playoffs, I'm going to cash it in. It's just not the way I lead, and I'm super competitive, and I want to be out there with the guys, and I look forward to being out there.
Stink, we had a very interesting conversation about this yesterday, whether it should be up to the player or the coach, whether it's better for the player or for the betterment of their career. What do you make of what both teams decided to do with their respective quarterbacks?
Well, I think it really comes down to what the medical profession says, and it comes down to, can you further your injury? If you've got a somewhat of a groin pull, I mean, players want to play, and players are going to go out and play. Mm-hmm. And it comes down to the medical staff. If Cam Newton's shoulder is such that we need to have surgery on this thing, and you're doing further damage, you're irritating it more and doing further damage, and you have whatever he has, I don't know, could be a torn labrum, it could mm-hmm. be something else. If you're going to do further damage to it and create degenerative changes in that shoulder joint, like, we have too much invested in you to allow you to go out there and play. And there's a big difference between struggling, and he has struggled for the last month with that shoulder, and having, you know, a groin pull. And so there's a huge difference there, and it comes down to each individual. I totally agree with Aaron Rodgers, and I guarantee you Cam Newton would go out and play. He would go out and play, and he would have the same kind of attitude. I'm going to go out there and play. He's done it for the last month, last 6 weeks, or whatever it is. So, you know, it comes down to, are you going to do further damage? You are invested. And think about this now. Every rule that has been made in the National Football League here in recent years has been made to protect the quarterback, yep. mm-hmm. to protect that investment, and also to create offense. And if you're looking at yourself as our franchise quarterback is going to struggle and maybe need surgery or need something done to his shoulder, you know, the investment that we have in him, we're just not going to let him play. I totally understand it.
Well, and yesterday, CeCe, you said, or you asked almost rhetorically, is Cam Newton more important than the right guard? And for the organization, the answer actually has to be yes. For the organization, they have to look at Cam and any potential to further an injury as, wait, the juice is not worth the squeeze here. Like, and so for Cam, Cam did the right thing. He, by all accounts, fought to play. That he said, I want to play. I want to be out there. But the organization, I believe, did the right thing in saying, we are not making the playoffs. And by the way, even if it's as bad as it looked on this past Monday night, even if they were alive for the playoffs, the argument might be you need to shut him down. We have seen quarterbacks. I think one of the reasons Andrew Luck missed a full year is because he was trying to play through something instead of dealing with it and addressing it when he needed to. The Rodgers thing to me is a totally separate discussion. He and by the way, Aaron Rodgers, who I think is as good as any quarterback I've ever seen, he's being a little unfair when he says, I wouldn't shut it down with nothing to play for. Like, last year, he came back from a collarbone injury. They lost that game. They got eliminated from the playoffs. And then the team shut him down because they didn't want him to do further damage. A similar situation to Cam. So I understand why Rodgers isn't getting shut down. He has a groin pull, like you were saying. Cam is a thrower of the football, and he could do more damage to his arm throwing the football. So while I know he wants to play, the organization, it's their job to say, it's not your choice, Cam Newton.
It is the organization's job in the long term to look out for their products, right, the people they're putting money in. But the organization has also told Cam Newton, you're the face of this franchise, you're the leader of this franchise. And this is something only being in the locker room you're going to understand. If you take me off the field, you take away my ability to lead. Because there's two ways that guys lead. They either talk or what they do. And I used to tell guys, because guys get tired of guys who are chirping all the time. Guys who are just running their mouth all the time. It's hard to follow guys like that. So what I used to tell guys is, regardless of what I say, I want you to watch me and watch how I come to work. Watch how we lose games. Watch how I do the interviews. Watch how I train the next day. Watch how I watch film. Watch how long I stay. Watch how many jugs I catch. Watch how many heels I run. Watch how many sprints that I run. Watch how many times that I'm not late to work. You lose your ability when you're off the field to lead guys in the locker room. I understand what the organization is doing, but Cam's got a job to do. And if Cam had told them, no, I'm more important, no, I don't need to be in there, would you send a message the wrong way and you lose the ability to lead guys long term? So I understand what the organization has done. I understand that. But that star player, that franchise player, he's got a job to do, and that's to always to lead. And when guys can't hear you, guys can see you. And you never want to be able to lose that ability because guys see through it. With coaches, organization, the players in the locker room, they see through that phoniness. And I believe in Green Bay, there's a lot of phoniness there. The players see through it. The coach has gotten fired. That's the only reason why Aaron Rodgers is out there, because last year he was in the same situation, and he was like, no, these games aren't important, and I am more important than those other players. But the other players, their careers are just as important. They should be to you.
Sure.
They're that important to me. That's the reason why I play in the preseason. I asked the offensive coordinator, what do you need from me this week? He said, Chris, we don't need that much. How long is the offensive line playing? How long is Randall McDaniel playing? And I always use him as an example because he's one of the greatest players I ever played with. And I say, I'm not going to be in there as long as the quarterback. I'm going to be in there as long as Johnny Randall is in there, as long as Randall McDaniel's in there, because I'm trying to be with those guys. And I don't want them to feel like that I'm bigger than them. I'm better than them. And that's what you get into in these situations in NFL locker rooms.
Right. The leadership aspect is really important. And people do, you know, they do look at you. You know who the players are. You know who the guys that are real are. And you look at those guys, and I will say this, man, I spent a lot of time injured. I rarely missed,
yes.
But I spent a lot of time injured. But when I was injured, when I had back surgery and had to miss a few weeks, when I had, you know, a knee surgery mm-hmm. that I had to miss a few weeks with, you do become somewhat of a pariah, if you will. You're not part of it.
No.
We used to always say in our room, you're dead. Like,
yep.
That guy's dead.
Yep.
Like, he can't help us anymore. He's dead.
He's and, not and a it's, part of the main
and
flow
I tell you
of the
what,
team.
It makes you feel, as a player, you're beside yourself not being able to be out there.
Which is why we talk so much coming into the season about how Carson Wentz, no matter what he did last year, he wasn't there at the very end to really help him, and he wanted to come back and prove that he could. It was the same thing. He didn't feel like he was part of the team either.
I also think, and Stink, you and I talked about this, not behind Chris's back. Chris was sitting right there, but off the air, when the Le'Veon Bell situation was going on, mm-hmm. and Chris was, I kept saying for Le'Veon, he can get hurt. And Chris talked about his philosophy was, man, I never worried about injuries.
You can blow your Achilles working out.
Right. That was, and do you remember you walked out here and you were laughing and you were saying, man, Chris, God blessed you in so many ways to never think about injuries. You, part of what made you, see was you broke your collarbone early on. And best I can tell, no, you didn't miss time ever again until you were playing with the Dolphins and they slashed your kidneys or your whatever organ it was. Mm-hmm. And so you went a dozen years playing the style you played. And for whatever reason, we're just dancing through the raindrops, training right. You said God blessed you, whatever it was. That has given you a very, I think, unique perspective on what it is means to be injured, what it does mean to miss time. But your story is an exception more than now. Stinks is an exception almost in the other direction, right. 29 surgeries. But does that make any sense? Like the way you look
it
at missing
sense
time due to
from
injuries.
You, but from me, I have all these other experiences. I got just as much respect for Stink's career. I had guys that were hurt off to Robert Smith. I love Robert Smith. Mm-hmm. Man, Robert Smith, if he get in a car crash, Robert Smith's going to the hospital. That's just the way this business is. It's no disrespect to guy if he's there. Man, you do it what you can. Yeah, that's my experience, but I got a world of experience with other guys. So I do have empathy. I have tremendous understanding. But at the beginning, end of the day, the best ability you got is your availability. Don't tell me how good you are. Can you play today? All right, because that's what's important. And the more you practice, the better you're going to get. The more games you play in, the better you're going to get. So, yeah, I got great experience because I didn't get hurt. Part of that's my training. At the beginning, end of the day, God bless me. He made me very, very unique. He made me an unbelievable athlete, but also coupled with focus, and I want to be out there with my teammates.
Yeah, and that's really what it comes down to. And then, you know, Chris acts like he's never been hurt. I guarantee you he's played hurt plenty. Like, yes. We all have to play hurt plenty. The issue is, like for Cam, we'll shut you down if you're playing hurt and you're not playing well hurt.
Yes.
Right. Like, now, if
yes.
Cam was playing well hurt,
it'd be
see,
different.
Here's the,
he was
here's
hurt
the deal. I played my whole career. I never played a game where I wasn't hurt.
Right.
Mm. You know, I started 100 and probably, you know, close to, with preseason and postseason, I started probably close to 200 games. There was never a game I wasn't hurt that I played. But guess what? I went out and I played well, hurt. Mm-hmm. And that's what you have to do.
I will never take another sick day off. I'm so motivated by you. My best ability is my availability.
I think your best ability is responsibility.
January 9th is the over-under.
Take summer.
There you go. I'll be here every day until that day. Coming up, can Lamar Jackson upset the Chargers? That is next on First Things First. Lamar Jackson in the just once, I want you to spend a day in my life. All the things I all. Up on.
I'd give half my net worth to make sure that never happens.
Mean! Lamar Jackson and the Ravens.
How many times in your career have you said network?
I don't know.
Okay.
Are in the thick of the AFC playoff race, and they have a tough test Saturday when they face the LA Chargers.
It's a negative number right now.
Chargers safety Adrian Phillips said that Lamar and Pat Mahomes are equally dangerous.
Aren't the traffic police still looking for you to pay some tickets?
Chill out, man. Chill out.
CeCe, how much of a threat do the Ravens pose to the Chargers?
Oh, they're a threat. Anytime you can play the defense that all everyone thought was obsolete, good, hard defense, it's not going to last. And the way Baltimore's played defense, the history of this franchise, yes, they can win. They can win anywhere against any team because they can negate your ability to be able to score, take away your big plays because they have coverage. They get after the quarterback. I mean, they do a variety of things. They're not just a one-dimensional defense. Say, they're going to blitz you and play man-to-man. No, they can play zone. They can play man. They can come after you with four. They can come after you with six. They have that ability. So their versatility, I believe, matches up well with the team that they're facing. So, yes, this will be a game that the Chargers, when they look across there, they saw the tape of Kansas City. They got a huge respect for Kansas City. And I'm certainly, in seeing that film, they have a great deal of respect for this Ravens defense.
See, he's talking about when the Ravens played Kansas City for the Chargers the week before, obviously, the Chargers played Kansas City. I thought Stank yesterday made a tremendous point that I wanted to look into more last night after he made it about what the Ravens are doing defensively without forcing turnovers. Because this is almost unprecedented. For a team to be the number one scoring defense and the number one yards per game defense without forcing turnovers, they're second to last in the NFL in turnovers forced. So think about that. One of the reasons a team typically can be allowing the fewest number of points is they're not going up against as many real possessions because they're getting picks, they're getting strip sacks, they are taking the ball away. The Ravens have been awful at turning the other team over. And despite that, despite the fact that the other teams had good time of possession, good number of overall raw possessions, they are just absolutely choking you out. They're third against the rush, third against the pass, number one yards per play, number one yards per game, number one points per game, number 31 in turnovers for. So that just speaks to you on a play-by-play basis how difficult it is to move the ball. Everyone against Baltimore this year is facing third and eight. It's just you live in third and eight, and they are a very difficult team, of course, to convert third and eight. That's why they have been able to turn their season around. Yes, Lamar Jackson, the running game, have been a great story, but it's all irrelevant if the defense hasn't been as good as it's been.
And as far as Lamar Jackson, I look for the X factor for the L.A. Chargers, and that being the rookie sensation, Derwin James. When you have someone like Lamar, Derwin, he will be in the box. He can match him speed. He's a bigger body. Like, so when the Chargers, I believe, in this game plan, it's a very, very different game plan where he is spying and he is playing a center fielder waiting for Lamar to be able to come out of the pocket because he's not going to throw the ball but so much. So I look for the Chargers to be able to utilize the sensational rookie this year voted into the Pro Bowl. Mm-hmm. This should be a game a lot like a college game where it's Florida State Seminoles. They face the Louisville Cardinals. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to seeing them in space matching up against each other.
Do they get the advantage with having Melvin Gordon back against this Ravens defense?
Oh, well, it makes the defense to where they have to credibly play both the run and the pass. I would say if you don't have a legitimate running threat, it gives whatever small chance you had against this Ravens defense, it almost takes it away. Like the Chiefs, as great as that offense has been, they didn't have Kareem Hunt that game, if you remember. Obviously, he had just been cut right before that game. And they had 17 points with 2 minutes left. Mm-hmm. Now, Pat Mahomes had a spectacular final drive, the 4th and 9, the 4th and 3 near the goal line, and then they kicked a field goal in overtime. That's how they ended up getting up to 27. But the Ravens in that game said, okay, we don't think you can run on us. We know you don't have a superstar running back. Yep. We're going to play the pass. The Chiefs had success in the first half, put up 17 in the first half. They had like 30 yards of offense through the first third quarter and the first half of the fourth quarter in that game against Baltimore, as Baltimore took control of that game. It took some sensational Patrick Mahomes moments in order for the Chiefs to kind of steal that win. So having Melvin Gordon is a critical piece of this for the
Chargers. I believe Melvin Gordon is one of the most underrated offensive players in the NFL. Not as only his ability to be able to run between the tackles, but he's got breakaway speed and he's a good receiver out of the backfield. And I believe that that's where Baltimore can be caught off guard. Because they're gonna commit. Baltimore, you're not going to run the ball on them. As a philosophy, you never can run the ball on Baltimore because they have girth. They got big dudes at defensive tackle. They always have. They got linebackers that are bigger. That's the way that they draft them and the way that they mold them. C.J. Mosley is in that mode of a Ray Lewis and everything. So with a guy like Melvin Gordon, getting him out and Antonio Gates out into the pass routes, I believe that's Phillip Rivers' ability to be able to take some of those things away from Baltimore and what they like.
And for Baltimore, I mean, this game's obviously on Saturday. So they can put – both of these teams can put a little extra pressure, whomever wins, on the team they're chasing in their division. Like, Pittsburgh's got a very tough game on Sunday. Baltimore can get a win and at least briefly overtake Pittsburgh in the standings. The Chargers are chasing Kansas City, who has a very difficult game Sunday night in Seattle.
Yes.
If the Chargers get this win, then the Chiefs go into that Seattle game, and it's a must-win game.
Yes.
The Chiefs go into that Seattle game, and it's like, hold on, you're saying this great season we've had,
and it comes
right now we're the 5 seed? Like, we have to win in Seattle to avoid being the 5 seed and having zero home playoff games? So I'm not saying the Chiefs and the Steelers are going to be watching this game, but they're going to know who wins it.
Sure.
They're gonna know Sunday before their games who has won this game. So whomever wins it has an enormous edge.
You can't believe Mangini when he says the players don't look ahead to the schedule and the players don't watch the games. Oh, they're going to be watching.
Okay.
They'll know exactly, because huge stakes for both of those teams if they're able. If Pittsburgh's able to go to New Orleans and win, and Kansas City gets upset for Seattle, oh, my goodness, man, we got a playoff race.
Those are two big ifs, though. Coming up, has Deshaun Watson.
If was a fifth, Jenna.
Yes.
Be drunk.
We all be drunk.
Was it tricky?
No.
Been the most clutch quarterback in the NFL this season.
God,
you teach.
Career.
I'm trying to learn. We'll talk about that next.
No, I'm not teaching.
No, I'm not.
And
you sure ain't learning.
Matter of fact, I got classes canceled.
Back here, first things first, we are going viral. Patty Mahomes is having an amazing season, leading the NFL in passing yards and touchdowns, but one thing Mahomes might love even more than football is ketchup. The quarterback went viral earlier this season when we found out he puts ketchup on almost everything and even used to get ketchup as a birthday present. Oh. Well, all of that has led to this. Take a look.
I'm all for it, man. Get that money, bro.
Get the money.
Say it. A little too
corny. He needs someone in his life, man. He's too grown and about to be too rich.
You can't teach
to be
class,
putting ketchup
man.
You can't, on everything,
that's
man.
That's your issue, not the fact that he did the commercial or that what the commercial was. He didn't like that he put it on mac and cheese.
I agree. Take the endorsement. He's not endorsing some illicit product. Ketchup is a classic American condiment. I think the most used American condiment. I got no problem with that.
Nick would prefer to be on a burger or a hot dog.
Yeah, exactly.
On the...
You want a list of the top condiments?
Sure.
I got that for you.
No, what
you
want is I want fun NBA players.
But 2 weeks from now, we'll do tap. Ketchup, obviously, number one. Mustard or mayo, number two. Salsa's got to be up there.
Listen.
Not the point, though. He can't put it on. He's too grown to be putting it on real food. If there's not a bun involved or a potato involved, there should be no ketchup.
You can put it on eggs.
Eggs is a big one. People put it on eggs.
I prefer a little hot sauce, but there are people that do it.
I don't love it. I would say if he didn't have...
And you're a foodie, too.
I'm a foodie, man. Like, yeah, on hash browns, like breakfast foods. How about this? Breakfast foods or bunned foods? How about those are your ketchup foods? Breakfast foods, bunned foods.
There's a lot of sugar in ketchup.
What about a french fry, dog?
I said potatoes. So, yeah, breakfast foods, bun foods, potato foods.
Okay,
this conversation's going off the rails.
Well, these are just the rules. We're in a society, Jenna. I would appreciate if we all...
Okay,
now
wait a second.
I'm happy to have this conversation.
Well, Jenna,
yeah.
Have your daughters ever had ketchup?
She gone.
So that's the only weakness in our family is that.
Wait till you get Nick's list.
Only weakness in our family is lack of honesty.
So much sugar.
Stories to start.
Constant lies.
Time for stories to start your morning. We begin in the NBA where the Warriors lost to the Jazz last night, 108-103.
Pepper said he saw you at the gym. Said you got a lot of weaknesses.
That is not true. Not at the gym. I have none. Steph Curry played well, dropping 32 points, including 5 three-pointers. However, it was not enough. After the game, he said, quote, "We need to get our edge and the chip on our shoulder." Nick, what do you make of Golden State's performance last night?
This game was so confusing.
Yes.
If you look at the box score, it's like, okay, so Steph scored 32. KD scored 30. Joe Ingles led the Jazz with 20. Donovan Mitchell was 5 of 26.
They're never going to win that game.
And the Jazz
and
won.
They
and the
lost.
Jazz won?
I was on NBA.com watching the I didn't stay up for this one, Jenna. I'm not going to tell no lie. All right, so I was trying to watch the 3-minute clips, and they were just following Steph Curry around. I was like, they lost.
They lost.
Steph was sensational, though.
Yeah, the way Rudy Gobert was guarding Draymond, you're going to see more of this. He was playing 15 feet off him.
It was embarrassing.
Yeah.
All right, moving on to the Celtics. This season has been bumpy, to say the least. They lost to the Suns 111-103 last night. Yeah, this is the same Phoenix team that has one of the worst records in the league and hasn't made the playoffs in 9 seasons. Nick, Celtics have lost back-to-back games. What do they need to do to get back on track?
I don't know. Maybe lose a player or two from their rotation so they can get back to what they were last year. You mentioned earlier that Jason Tatum hasn't looked like himself. People don't have defined roles. I understand last night they were without essentially their entire front court. They got killed on the boards, but I don't care. You're playing the worst team in the league, the Phoenix Suns.
Yes.
I don't care they've won 3 in a row.
They have punted already on the season.
At home. And by the way, you had a nice little 8-game winning streak against bad teams. Lose to Detroit, lose to Phoenix. Mm-hmm. You got Milwaukee, Philly, and Houston, and some other tough games all before New Year's Day. I've been saying all year, fourth best team in the East.
Nick, you're not supposed to say that.
Oh,
that's
you're
the part
of
me.
Okay,
Nick was
ahead.
The first one on that corner. Watch out for Boston going backwards. How will Brad Stevens do with an elite roster and that bench? Yeah, it can be a plus, but it also can be a negative with guys trying to get their shots and no defined roles. Nick was on it. Celtics got to do something to get this turned.
See, pointing out things that you're supposed to point out, my only weakness.
I wish the camera was on me. When you talk clutch quarterbacks this season, my eyes rolled so far I got dizzy. Deshaun Watson might not be the first name that comes to mind, but he's actually been better than most in those situations. Tied with Drew Brees for the most fourth quarter comebacks this season with 5. The Texans face a tough challenge as they battle for seeding in the AFC. They get the Eagles on Sunday. Here's what Deshaun Watson had to say about those clutch situations.
You've been through those situations before, so you learn through, the tight ball games. But, for me and understanding, if you look at all the games, majority of the games are very, very close, regardless if they're home or away. So, you just got to be prepared for every situation. And you got to be very good in situational football, especially down stretch, because majority of the games are going to come down to, that last drive or, the last couple minutes. For, guys on the defense or special teams, putting the ball back in my hands to give me as a chance on offense to go down and win the game or put the game away, it gives them a lot of confidence. So, it's a lot of confidence with the ball in my hands, and I'm going to continue to, build that trust and respect throughout the locker room.
CeCe, I actually don't think his answer did his game justice. I think he kind of chalked it up to, well, I'm confident, and you've been in a situation once or twice. You pretty much know what to do. There are very good quarterbacks that have done it before that aren't doing it as well as Deshaun Watson. What makes him so good in clutch situations?
The thing about it, there's a number of things that have to happen. One is something you just can't see. There's just certain guys in stressful situations, they just don't get stressed out. And they're able to, instead of it heighten them and their overall reaction, they are able to calm down in intense situations and be able to do what they have prepared to do. Other people, they start thinking faster. The faster the game is played, faster game is played in their head. And it typically plays out where we as fans, we can tell the difference between, there's our guys that are just playmakers. They are ballers, and that's what he is. His ability to be able to make quick decisions and get rid of the football. Now, what I worry about in this game, yeah, he has been successful. But when they don't have a running game, that offensive line is not great. How is he able to know the difference when getting rid of a bad play? Because they're going to be on top of him. And how do I hold it a little bit longer and wait for one of my wide receivers to be open? Because that's what I believe the game will be determined. I believe offensively, Philadelphia is going to have some success. And if they're going to win, Deshaun might have to be in a comeback situation or in a one-score game. But I believe with the pass rush of Philadelphia, he's going to have to be careful in holding on to the ball and realize that if the play is over, to let the play be over and not let it lead to a couple different mistakes.
But, and to speak to that, as far as knowing to get rid of the ball, he's the only quarterback in the league that's been sacked more than Dak. And so some of that is his doing, some of that is the offensive line's doing, but it's not all the offensive line, as bad as it was certainly early in the year. And it's not great now, but it's not the total train wreck it was early in the year. But this clutch stuff is, this is the reason we didn't have the TV show yet, but why, when his draft was happening, I thought he should have been, no question about it, the first quarterback take. Now, he was the third quarterback taken. I didn't see the Mitch Trubisky stuff at all. And I, if I'm being honest, I didn't see Pat Mahomes being this. I don't know that anyone saw him being this. But I watched him at Clemson. I watched him in the college football playoff. And I said, if this guy stays healthy, he has it. He has
what?
The ability.
What is that? What is it?
Well, it is not just staying calm in the biggest in the most pressure-packed situations, but the very special guys get better when the stakes are the highest. Mm-hmm. Like, if you look at athletes across all sports, guys that can just maintain their regular level of play in the most clutch situations are great. Like, most guys get a little bit worse in those spots. Right. There's a select few that get
now,
a little bit better.
We've seen a lot of players in college be very, very successful. But what Nick is saying is, I saw this not only against college football, not only in the SEC, very, very respectable, but more importantly, I saw this against a professional Alabama team.
Twice in the national championship game. Twice. I saw him come this close and lose, mm-hmm. and then come this close and win. And so to see, like, that is the closest facsimile of an NFL defense you're going to play in the highest stress spot. And I saw him do it. And I said, okay, like, if this guy's healthy, I know he can make the throws. I like his athleticism. And the it factor, it's why I'm always skeptical of the quarterback that my knock on Mitch Trubisky was, we've never seen him in a big game. The last big game he played in was in whatever high school state quarterfinal or semifinal mm-hmm. he was in. Like, 1 year at North Carolina, I don't know if he has that. I still don't know if he has that.
Give me two quarterbacks not named Rodgers and Brady who are as clutch or who were the epitome of clutch the way he's trying to be one day.
Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield's got that it factor. Like, he is clutch. He is also, he's a leader. One of Deshaun's things, not only the clutch, how do you know a leader? Look behind him and look how many people follow him at Clemson. Dynamic leader. Came to the NFL. Took over this franchise. So, Baker Mayfield, I would say, one, I'm going to put in that class immediately. And Patty Mahomes. I mean, Patty Mahomes, I mean, goodness gracious.
I'm in history, but okay.
Ketchup commercials, but young guys who I expect to be doing this in the NFL for the next 10 years, those three quarterbacks right
and
there.
And the guys from, you mean, still playing but have already proven it, he's not the guy anymore, but Eli. I mean, that's what Eli's whole game was. Yeah. Was Eli was able to, he didn't drop off at all, no matter how big the stakes were. I don't know that he got a lot better, but when everyone around you is getting worse and you're able to maintain that level mm-hmm. no matter how big the game is, that's what allowed him to have the success that he had when the Giants were a really good football team.
All right, let's move on to the Chiefs. Speaking of Patty Mahomes, they face a tough road challenge as they travel to Seattle. Mahomes and Russell Wilson, they both have a lot in common. Yeah, sure. Both rank in the top five in passer rating. Both go off script and give defenses fits. Both were actually drafted to play baseball. Good thing that didn't work out. Here's what Seahawks coach Pete Carroll had to say about facing Kansas City.
They have shown everything now. You know, we've seen them. You know, after all these games, we know what kind of the whole scope of this offense is. The first month of the season, everybody was kind of on their heels. And so hopefully we can, you know, settle into it. It's not that it gets easy because they have such a diverse attack that, you know, you got to be ready for a lot of stuff. But, you know, our guys are, you know, they're up for it. They're ready for the challenge and all of that. And we got to do a great job on their really classy receivers. You know, Kelce and Hill are just unbelievably talented guys, having great years. So there's a lot of issues here. So I think our guys will be ready to do this.
All right, CeCe, I'm going to ask you the same question that opponents have been asking about this Chiefs team all season long. How do you slow down Patrick Mahomes and that offense?
The first thing you got to do in this game is you got to make sure your offense understands the firepower that's on the other side. And you can't turn the ball over. You can't go three and out. You can't put them on a short field. In third down situation, man, that's the most important down to be able to advance those sticks, to be able to give yourself another 3 to 4 chances to be able to advance the ball. When you're playing against these high-powered teams, don't try to attack the offense with your defense. No, no, no. Go in the offensive room and tell them, guys, they're going to score 30 on us if you guys turn the ball over. All right, if you guys can win time possession, if we can win the turnover battle, I believe it's got to be 34 to 35 minutes time possession on Seattle's running game. They're number one in the National Football League. So what you have to do is you have to make Kansas City play at a pace that they're not comfortable. And the reason why is because not only playing against Seattle's defense, but they're playing against the clock. You also have to get the lead. You can't turn the ball. You can't give Patty Mahomes a couple extra possessions. So those are the things that would have to happen. And one guy from the defense, we talk about Bobby Wagner, great linebacker that they have for Seattle. If Frank Clark does not have a great game, I think it's impossible for Seattle to win. So those are the three things. Time possession, I need 33 to 35 minutes. I need a turnover battle. I need to win that by +2. And Frank Clark, you heard about him 2 weeks ago. He said that's his defense. Richard Sherman, it's not his defense anymore. Okay, Frank Clark, this is the type of game that Richard Sherman and the Legion of Boom, that they would do something to tilt the field in the favor of Seattle.
And what you're talking about, if the way to beat the Chiefs is don't turn the ball over and be able to win time possession by running, that way no team is better suited than Seattle. Seattle is only first in two offensive categories. They are the number one rushing team in football, and they have the fewest turnovers in football. So, like, as far as them not turning the ball over themselves and then being able to run the ball, I watched them against the Rams after the Dante Fowler strip sack to put the Rams up 12. There was 5 minutes left in this football game. Seattle was down 12. You know what they were doing? Running.
Yep.
They 5 minutes left, down 2 scores. We are going to stay doing what we do. And it damn near worked for them. They scored and they got the ball back for one last chance to try to win that football game. They are not going to abandon the run. They could be down 14 points, and they won't abandon the run. The key for me with Kansas City, because if the Chiefs are the team that I believe they are, which is the best team in the NFL, they know what's at stake in this game. They know the difference between being the 1 seed and the 5 seed, and they also know whether, even though they won't admit it, week 17 is as close to a bye as you can get. They're at home against the Raiders. And so if they win this game, they're going to be the 1 seed. If they're the team that I think they are going to win this game unless that crowd adds, forget a 12th man, a 13th, and a 14th man via pre-snap penalties. If the Chiefs are getting false starts and if they are
not... And that's something we're concerned about with the Chiefs.
They commit a lot of penalties.
Not time of possession, but all those penalties. Will they be able to overcome 1st and 20, 1st and 15? Those are things that really, if offense can't stay on schedule, like, are they going to run the ball? And how many penalties or bad situations will they be in?
And if you're so concerned about penalties, are you as an offensive lineman getting a beat and a half late on the snap?
Yes.
To where Frank Clark is already has you beat before you get out of your stance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's something. So for Mitchell Schwartz, who's the right tackle who should have been a Pro Bowler, for Eric Fisher, who's the left tackle who was a Pro Bowler, those two guys got to be on the snap count, got to be ready, because that's a way the game can be wrecked. A Pat Mahomes strip sack, a tipped pass that turns into a turnover. Because what we know is the Chiefs can score, and in Seattle's time with Russell Wilson, they're 4-27 if the opponent breaks 24 points. The Chiefs have broken 24 points every game all year.
Wow.
So unless they turn the ball over a bunch, they should be fine. But that's how they would turn the ball over. That's what they got to be concerned about.
All right, let's take a break. Bart Scott is in house.
Write that down, Bart. 4-27.
What do the Cowboys need to do? Get back on track. Use the pencil. It's probably better. We're back right after this. Here, first things first, former Pro Bowl linebacker Bart Scott joins the show. Hey, Bart.
What'd it do? They told me it was Ashy in the back.
You brought something in with you today. You brought gifts?
I come bearing gifts, man. Listen, you guys have embraced me as one of your own. I'm like the cousin that you only invite over every once in a while.
You drink up all the liquor.
I bought this for my boy. You got to hide the liquor for me.
Do you want? Am I supposed to unwrap it?
Absolutely. Yeah. Just pull it. Just slide it out right here. This is for you, man. You've been out here spitting a lot of hot fire, man. But I don't want you to run out of lead. Go ahead and put that right there. Let's turn it that way. Go ahead and read that.
Write that down. All it says on there, write that down.
That's awesome.
You have this made?
I don't want you to run out of lead, man, because you got a lot of stuff to learn. Put that right here. Keep this close. Keep this close. Keep that close.
My favorite guest of all time.
Keep that close.
It really writes. Yeah, this is a real pencil.
Yeah, we're trying to teach you something.
All right. I got you. But look, let's go ahead and
put me out in the process.
I won't hit you.
Don't pay attention, Jay-Z.
Right,
numbers
here
do
we go.
Lie sometimes.
Two weeks left in the NFL's regular season. And for some, a chance to make a final playoff push. The Dallas Cowboys have already made the push, now looking to clinch a win over Tampa Bay, and they win the NFC East. Cowboys host the Bucs on Sunday. This team is 6-1 at home this season, while just 2-5 on the road. Zeke talked about the team's approach to Sunday's game.
Approaching this game like we've approached, you know, the past six, you know, back against the wall, this is a must-win for us. You know, we got to do whatever we can to go out there and secure that NFC East division title. And we just gotta, you know that nothing's gonna be given to us. We gotta go out there and take everything. So, you know, we just gotta have that mindset going into this Sunday, so we can come out of there winning.
All right, Bart, which Cowboys team do you expect to see on Sunday? Is it going to be the team that got shut out by the Colts or the team that we saw the 5 weeks prior on that win streak?
I think somewhere in the middle, right, because I think this defense was exposed a little bit when they couldn't get to the passer. I think they ran into the number one offense, the number one offensive line in the game, and he was clean. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to tip your hats to what they're doing over there in Indianapolis. You know, I called that game. I knew it was going to be a blowout because when you can't get that, your identity is, you know, getting to the passer and playing great defense, rushing the ball. Zeke didn't get enough carries last week. I think they go in and the offense runs again through Zeke. But they have to be careful because this Tampa Bay offense is top 10 and is one of the most explosive offenses in the game. And if they get a lead, then do you stay true to who you are? I heard you guys talking about Seattle. And if they get behind, they're going to stay true to their identity. They're going to run the ball, let the offense flow that way. I think Tampa Bay, you know, is a team that can put up points with anybody. And if they're on, they're on. And they have nothing to play for. I always like to watch teams play or players play after they get snubbed. And Mike Evans, over 1,300 yards receiving, he's going to be looking to prove a point against a very good opponent.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that the Tampa offense can score with anyone. 100% true, which is the reason they only have 5 wins, is the defense is turning. The opposing running backs against this defense have 1,800 yards at 5 yards per carry. Opposing quarterbacks against this defense are completing 72% of their balls, 111 rating. So you're turning everyone on the opposing offense into all-pro caliber players, which is why whatever the margin of this game is, I want to see if the Cowboys can open it up in the passing game.
Right.
If you can't have a few explosive plays in the passing game against the Tampa defense, the hell chance do you have against Chicago or Seattle or any of the defenses in Minnesota that you could face in the first round of the NFC playoffs? So that to me is what's most telling. The Cowboys can wrap up the division this week. They have every reason to go. They have everything to play for, I should say, while Tampa has little to play for. And when they did have something to play for, they still couldn't stop people. So how explosive can the offense be after being shut out last week against Indy?
Well, for me, they should be looking to bounce back, understanding that it's important to be playing your best football in December, understanding that you need to carry that momentum. But it's going to be on Dak, and he's going to have to call the game from the line of scrimmage because Tampa's going to try and load up and take something away. And he's going to have to recognize if that eighth man is in the box, their gap, you know, gap sound eating up all the gaps so Ezekiel doesn't have lanes to run, he's going to have to audible and call the plays from the line of scrimmage. I don't know if he's capable of doing that. I don't know if he's a guy that can recognize, okay, the safety's inverting on the backside. Let's check Omaha, which basically just means opposite away from the man that we can't buy. We can't block the free overhang guy. They're going to have to put the game in his hands and allow him to be a quarterback, an upper echelon quarterback. I don't know if he's ready to do that.
Well, I just believe they have to throw the ball to the outside. Going into a game like this, I'm concerned about Tampa Bay's explosiveness from an offensive standpoint, their big plays, their wide receivers. And also, I'm concerned if I'm Dallas, if I get behind in this game, like Indianapolis. Dallas drove down the field, got a field goal block. Throw down the field again. Got stopped on fourth down. Now, if those things, if you have some struggle early in the game, and then, man, McCoy, Jason Pierre-Paul, man, they can wreck your Sunday afternoon. So if Dallas, if they get behind, which they have been behind before, do they lose their patience? Do they put too much pressure on Dak? For me, I'm coming out with play action, and I'm feeding Amari Cooper the ball. All right? I don't care if he's not demanding the ball. I'm feeding him the ball because they are a different offense when they get him the ball and get it to him early.
The other thing, and we've talked about this all week, was their energy level. And while it seems like an intangible for this Cowboys team, it seems like a big part of their game. The more hype they are, the more importance they place on a game, the better they come out, the faster they come out, and the better they play.
And I think that's not just for the Cowboys. I think that's almost league-wide. But where it's what's specific to the Cowboys, they're not the only team like this, but they're one of the teams like this. They are a different team at home. Like they haven't played a game yet at home this year where you felt like their energy was a problem. Now they're not undefeated at home, but
there's only a few places that have that type of atmosphere like Dallas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I could understand why a Dallas team would be a little bit different. But one thing that Jen and I talked about is it's not only playing at home; it's that this team is so young. Do they have the football maturity to be consistent weekend? Yeah, we understand NFL. A team is not going to come out with the same type of energy. But is that it's late in the season and they're a little tired? Or is it immaturity as a young football team, Bart?
Well, and they have to recognize what type of opponent they're dealing with. You know, they can deal with an opponent that has the U-Haul half-pack that's ready to go in Tampa Bay, or they can have that team that's going to be inspired and say, you know what, I'm going to wreck their season and come out and play inspired. And if you have to recognize which one you got, because if you have that guy, that team that's willing to do anything to win, then now your antennas have to be up for gadgets. Yeah. You know, you got to be able to communicate, trick plays, fake punts. Some teams, the only thing they have to hang their hat on is the fact that they can wreck somebody else's season and send somebody else home as well.
And you mentioned Mike Evans being snubbed from the Pro Bowl, and a guy you mentioned, though, who's going to have even extra motivation this week is Jason Pierre-Paul. Jason Pierre-Paul, who has, I think, 13.5 sacks this year, is having a great year in obscurity down in Tampa. He used to be in this division. You know what I mean? The team that he think, I would imagine, thought he was going to finish his career with in the Giants decided they were bringing everybody back on defense except for him. Right. He now gets to play Dallas, won't get to play Dallas again.
Yeah. Werner.
Right. Won't get to play Dallas again for the next few years. And he has he knows those offensive linemen's tendencies, and that offensive line has not been what it's been made out to be this season.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.